This is a View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Tuesday, the 10th of November, 2015, and my name is Patrick Smith. An attritional weekend for the Belfast Giants, full of highs and lows. 2 points from the weekend's endeavours, and coming up on this week's show, we look back at the Giants' trip to Nottingham and to Manchester. We hear from Omar Pasha, and we hear from Adam Keefe. Two DOPS assessments, both involving Belfast Giants incidents. We'll be looking back at that with Davey and with Aaron. We'll be looking ahead to the NCAA tournament once again, this time UMass Lowell being our subject, and Bobby Robbins being the guest. That is one interview you do not want to miss. We'll be looking ahead to this weekend's three games, Edinburgh, Cardiff and Dundee, and we'll be chatting with Icetime TV's Gareth Hewish about the Cardiff Devils and the move to the arena that's only weeks away. This is A View from the Bridge. You see, the difference between the podcast and actually being on the radio is the fact that I'm now in a position that if I say anything stupid, like Storm Shanter, I can actually cut it out and, you know, make it sound as if I know what I'm talking about. But so that's what we'll do with this show, like I do with every show. And speaking of actually cutting things to make people sound like they know what they're talking about, David McGimsey, how are you?
Paddy, I've relied on you for many, many years now to make me sound like sometimes like I know what I'm talking about. I don't do a great job, but I do my very best.
You had a late night on Sunday getting up and down to Manchester.
20-3 when the head hit the pillow, because we went out with the high-rolling Neil Russell and his lovely guard friend after the game for a meal where the Premiership footballers obviously eat. So it was good to catch up with everybody.
Absolutely. And also joining us as always, a man who's no stranger to having everything. I always cut out the ums and the ahs and the sighs. It's a bit of a behind the scenes there for you, Aaron Kernahan.
Well, you need to. If you didn't, this podcast would be about 4.5 hours long.
You well, sir?
I'm very well, thanks. I hope you guys enjoyed your weekend, especially in Manchester.
Good fun. We'll get to that in a second. What we're going to do is we'll start off by talking about the game at the NIC. On Saturday night, the Belfast Giants took on the Nottingham Panthers, but were subject to a 4-3 defeat. The Giants' goals coming from Beach, two of them there, and Mike Raja. The Panthers' goals, Lakowicz, Ling, Betteridge, and the winner came from Evan Mosey. It was a great game. The Belfast Giants took the lead three times in that game, but obviously ended up being the loser. But dominant for two periods, a disappointing third, and unfortunately the Panthers go away with the win.
Yeah, it was a fantastic game, a fantastic advert for ice hockey in Britain. As you say, ahead three times, really we should have won from that situation. Unfortunately, the third period, I don't know whether we tried to sit on the lead or what, and that's not really our game. I think we're the kind of team that, unfortunately, if we take the foot off the gas, it does seem to slip a little bit. And in that situation, we maybe should have gone for it in the third period. I don't know whether we're looking forward to maybe saving a bit for Sunday night. But, you know, it's always tough to go into somewhere like Nottingham and get a result. We weren't maybe expecting to, but to be three, you know, to be ahead after two periods and lose was disappointing.
Just looking at a couple of the goals, Davey, of course, they treated special team goals to begin with. Beach with an opening goal on the power play. And then Robert Lakowicz with a goal shorthanded, where it seemed like Stephen Murphy was on the puck, but Lakowicz dragged it back and puts it in the net.
I think you're in a situation there. Tom Darnell is on the opposite side to Stephen Murphy. He blows that down straight away because he can't see the puck. He's you know, you've got to give referees, we'll give them plenty of stick when they get things wrong. He's brilliantly positioned and he can see that the puck, whilst it may be slightly under Murphy, it's loose. Mm-hmm. And Lago's gone in there and toe-dragged it and stuck it into the net. So can't really complain too much about it. When you see the replay and you zoom in on it, you know, the puck is loose. But as I say, if Tom Darnell is on the opposite side of the ice, as we've had a number over the last few weeks called off against ourselves because the referees blow very quick when the puck's under the goalie, you know, in that situation, it's gone against us this time. It's just one of those things. As Aaron said, very, very good game of hockey. And I think there was an extent of trying to sit on what we had. In the third period, we got penned into our own zone a lot and we just couldn't get out. And the pressure told. The Panthers came in front of their home crowd. They had to. They were a goal behind and they pressed and they pressed and they they managed just to get through the defences.
What's your take on the fact that the hit on Wall, testing out the ribs early on, Wall back into the side after those broken ribs? And we spoke a couple of weeks ago that, you know, that was maybe should have happened, and Lloyd was straight in there.
100%. Put a bullseye, you know, put it out in the press that you're coming back after a rib injury. You know, you're putting a bullseye on yourself, and there's nobody better than the bulldog himself, Darren Lloyd, to go in there. I think it was Cam Janssen came off the bench to have a word with him, but, you know, I don't think that ended up with Cam Janssen and Keith having a bit of a toe-to-toe afterwards. But, that's Darren Lloyd's job. Yeah. That's what he paid for, and you know, he does it well.
Well, you brought up the tussle between Cam Janssen and Adam Keefe. Aaron, well, I'll come back to it, but Aaron, your take on that, an absolute belter of a tussle.
It was. It's the kind of fight you just don't really see that often anymore. And, you know, Keefe, for someone, he looked like he was going to struggle. He really had, you know, he was lacking in, not lacking, but, you know, he didn't have the reach that Janssen had, but he hung in there. And although he took a big hit early on, or sort of early on, and went down to his knees, he came back and he actually got a few good shots in himself. And it's one of those things, you know, you and I think sort of both think the same about fighting. We're not, you know, we're not really into it whenever, but you watch something like that and it's brilliant.
Yeah, Dave, you put on a View from the Bridge Twitter account earlier on that's the 40th fight that Adam Keefe has undertaken in a Belfast Giants shirt, and you'd want for no better than that.
No, as I said, the elbow pad's gone off 40 times now for the Giants, and he's a great leader for the club, and you know, he's taken on Janssen, who's a few inches taller than him, a stone heavier than him, and he's his game as a badger. He hangs in there, he gets a lot of big bombs off, and drop your gloves, the Pugilists website for the EIHL, you know, they've scored a fantastic draw between two real, real good combatants.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? It would take you to be very, very one-sided, very, very blinkered to come back at that and say that your side won it. Even as blinkered as we can be towards the Belfast Giants, I look at that fight and you come away with it being a tie.
Oh, sorry, Aaron, go ahead.
Keith won.
There is a few, if you go on the Drop Your Gloves, there is a few of those, you know, from both sides, you know, clear win for Lloyd, clear win for Janssen. And I think whoever was doing the announcing on Saturday night there, you know, was really pumping the crowd. And a bit, you know, the Panthers were a goal down at that stage. And it was, that's, we're talking about Darren Lloyd's job. That's Cam Janssen's job, to spark the crowd, to, you know, to get them re-engaged in the game, because they tailed off. We'd come out with a really, really strong start. First sort of 6, 7, 8 minutes, we were pretty dominant. And it was up to Cam Janssen to do something, and he's gone and he's sparked and got the crowd back into it. Win, lose, or draw, you know, we're here to watch the hockey, not watch the fighting. So that who actually wins is semi-unimportant, but, you know, both guys doing their jobs and doing them superbly well.
I asked Aaron this question. I'll bring it to you as well, Davey. The fact that the Giants were up three times in this game, but when the final buzzer went, they were one goal down. We saw the interview, and if anybody hasn't, go to the Downtown Radio Facebook site, the interview that Simon Kitchen does with Derek Welser, and he's obviously very disappointed at that third period performance. What do you think happened there?
Just as we were discussing earlier, I think we got 3-2 up, and we sort of thought, you know, we can take the win, or we can get this to overtime. You know, we'll sort of sit on what we have, and we changed what we had been doing and the things that we'd been doing well, which was hitting them with pace, you know, taking the blue line at pace and getting the pucks deep. And we stopped getting pucks deep, and we stopped cycling the puck, and we stopped getting shots on their goalie. And unfortunately, you know, Nottingham are a good team, especially at home this season. And they, you know, they've came in, they're nearly the top of the league, and they've came in on their run of good form. And you give teams like that a sniff, and you got to remember, hockey, it only takes 5 seconds to score a goal in hockey, you know, from one end of the ice to the other, 30, 35 shots a game, whatever, you know, you're going to get opportunities. And if you get pinned in your own zone, which we did, we just couldn't get out. And the more and more attritional Nottingham were, they were banging us hard, and we just couldn't get out. And, you know, eventually, once the barrier broke, we just couldn't get back into it again. It's hard to get yourself going again.
Two of the major incidents outside of the goals and outside of the fight are being assessed by, well, I say major incidents, two incidents in this are being assessed by the Department of Player Safety. The only two incidents to be assessed this week by the Department of Player Safety. One was automatic, and that was a match penalty for David Ling for kneeing on Daryl Lloyd. The other was requested by Nottingham, and it's for a slew foot by Daryl Lloyd. We've heard this before. We'll start off with the Ling hit on Lloyd, Aaron. In my opinion, binder rights.
Yeah, definite knee. Good view of it on the video as well, from the sort of the main camera. He just comes straight in with a knee sort of to the backside of Lloyd's right knee and hits him pretty hard. I don't think there's any doubts, and I think that'd be two games.
Davey, I got a text message from our good friend John O'Bullard soon after the game where I brought this up with him, and his response was he doesn't understand why Ling did it, and he wouldn't be surprised if there'd be a suspension there. Your take on the incident?
Yeah, he comes in at high pace. Lloyd's obviously already almost against the boards, and Ling comes in and does him. And there's, whenever you see the replay and the bit of the extended replay, you know, Tom Darnell's arms up straight away. He tells Ling, he said, there's absolutely no argument from Ling. He's just, yeah, being caught there.
Do you think Lloyd's wound him up?
Yeah. pretty much as straightforward as that. There'd been numerous tussles with Lloyd, with many other players right through the game. You know, Lloyd is in your face all the time. He's that agitator. That's his job, and as I've already said tonight. And he does. He got under Ling's skin, and I think Ling saw an opportunity for a bit of, you know, to lay one on him, and it came off wrong.
Sticking with Lloyd, Aaron, the other incident I said was requested by the Nottingham Panthers, and that's a slew foot. Now, he was accused of and found guilty of a slew foot the other week against the Cardiff Devils, and subsequent footage proving that that wasn't actually the case. What about this one?
Well, at least we know that he's got a free pass, you know, even if he's done it. They can't suspend him after the last time.
Mm. Have you seen the incident regards this one?
I haven't seen this one. I've had a look, and I think Davey has seen it. You know, I haven't seen this one myself yet. Okay. Davey, I'm more than happy to let you go ahead and see what you think of it. I know, you know, it's the game Daryl Lloyd plays, you know, and he's on the edge, and if he occasionally steps over it, we just have to live with it.
David?
Yeah, I put the clip on for you there earlier on Telegram, and it's one of those ones. It's hard to look at it and think that there not be a suspension coming. He's got tangled up with batteries. He's trying to go past him, and there's a bit of a tussle. And yeah, he takes his leg away from under him, whether it's deliberate or not, whether Dobbs have got different angles on it. But just from the one camera angle that I was watching the game tape back on, it looks like he's taking his leg from underneath him.
It does look like. I think it's difficult to speak, but it's especially when we don't know what the ruling's going to take place. But it looks like him. Is it Betteridge he has the tangle with?
It's pretty sure. Yeah.
And it does, and Betteridge does go down with his right skate going out. So I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if he was. Let's say for argument's sake that he is found guilty of this. Now we're in a position where the question is, and I'll start with you, David. The question is, is he a repeat offender? Do they have the audacity to turn around and say, we find him guilty and this is the second time?
No, I can't believe that. I think that they were clear enough. They came out the last time and said, look, obviously it's not a slew foot, and but the evidence has came too late. So I don't believe that would be the case. They would have to have... Even more brass neck than Dave Sims has. So you know, I don't believe that would be come into play.
Aaron?
Yeah, I would like to think that it won't, but nothing would surprise me.
Well, yeah, that's the very truth. The highlights...
When do we play Sheffield next?
No, yeah, not for a few weeks yet. Yeah, we'll wait until then.
Probably get a
suspended sentence.
Yeah.
The highlights of this game from Panthers TV, you can get them on kingdomofthegiants.com. The very next night, the Belfast Giants travelled across the Pennines up to the, just down the road from where I sit right now, to the Altrincham Ice Rink, the Storm Shelter, as I called it on Downtown Radio, the Storm Shelter in Altrincham, to take on the Manchester Storm. A penalty shots win, 2-1 for the Giants. The regulation goals came from Colin Shields and Ricky Berzinch. Now, I'll start, have you seen the highlights, Aaron?
Yeah.
Okay, well then, well, I'll start with David first of all, I'll come to you. It was a bit of a steal game.
It was. It started quite well, to be honest with you, but it was a very chippy game from both sides. The Giants were slashing and getting in faces, and just think that's a symptom of the smaller rink and trying to adjust down to size. But, you know, Manchester got out the lead, and then when we came back into the game, we came out in the second period, and for the first 10 minutes of the period, we got the goal and thought, if we get another goal here, the floodgates are going to open, because we were putting a lot more rubber on Kalemba than... Yeah. And Murphy was perhaps getting at that time. You know, I think we outshot them sort of by about 10 or 11 shots during the game. And we had opportunities with a really big opportunity in overtime. It would just, the puck just wouldn't settle down. I think it might have been Colin Shields right on the back stick.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wouldn't settle down from what was pretty much an open net, and just the puck wouldn't settle for him. And I think we did enough to win the game, but it was a pretty turgid affair. You know, I don't think we played 30 minutes on Sunday night, let alone, you know, 60 minutes. I just think we have so much more to offer. It was on the back of probably a disappointing, night on Saturday night, and missing Johan Edepalm, obviously, in defence and trying to double shift, and boys playing maybe we were banged up. It was just a one too far for us in the weekend. But, you know, we've came away with the 2 points, and that's what you have to, you know, take as the big positive.
I think just thinking back to that chance for Shields at the back post, it did bobble. And I think Simon Kitchen was shouting, you know, it was a harder shot to miss than score. But
oh, I think that's harsh.
But I think the ice wasn't the best that night. I think you speak to both coaches, speak to a lot of the players. I spoke to you. We'll hear from Omar Pasha in a second. But the ice conditions in Aldrin weren't great. And you could see that the way the puck was just bobbling around. And you could see that. We'll come to the penalty shots in a moment, but you could see that in the penalty shots. Aaron, the Giants had the weather an early 5-on-3. They did go down a goal and early in the second period pulled that back. But then it just became a bit of a toil.
The hardest working member of the team, that he'll let you know about that. Shot coming in from Colin Shields, and it's in the net. Unsighted was Zane Kalemba. A bit of a nothing play, Paddy. And was 30 seconds to go, 37 seconds to go on the power play. The Stenland Giants are back in the game. They've got a 1-1 scoreline, 19-19 to go in the second period.
Exactly the start to the second period that the Belfast Giants wanted, and Colin Shields coming up trumps once again the all-time top scorer for the Belfast Giants, and an absolutely brilliant finish. I don't think Ian Kalemba saw it. It seemed to be pretty well screened. And the Giants 1-1. And a great start to this period.
Yeah, there was a few bodies in front of him, but you know, it just sort of came out of nothing, didn't it?
I think they'll take him each and every way that comes, is.
Yeah, nobody seemed to really get anything going. You know, there were no great chances. And as you say, like the penalty shots, I think, summed the game up. I think it ended up as being 18 penalty shots, and it was the last one that was scored.
Yeah.
You know, it just seemed like one of those nights where it was never going to end, and nobody was going to be able to do that little something just to win the game.
Yeah.
The one thing, I suppose, it's probably good for the guys, you know, looking forward to this, but to get into somewhere like Manchester the week before going to Cardiff, you know, to get used to that style of rink, I think from that point of view, I think it could actually be quite a beneficial game for us as well.
What was your thoughts, Davey, on the Manchester side at home?
I'm surprised they weren't a little more physically engaging along. I thought they would. You know what you're going to get with an Omar Pasha team for start. You know, you're going to get small, skillful, fast players, and that's what they've got in the likes of Scarsella and Salazar, and, you know, they've got pretty good goaltending. Kalemba's coming, you know, he's better than he was a month ago, like that. And, you know, but I thought that, you know, either we kept them out there or they chose not to go into the dirty areas, yeah. Especially when they had power plays. They cycled round and round and round looking for the point shot, but we kept sticks and lanes and we kept them closed out that they couldn't get much on Murphy. So as much good defending by us or just an unwillingness from them to go in there and do whatever it takes, you know, to get a tip on the puck or whatever, they just didn't seem to want to go into that, you know, crease area.
I think as the shootout went on, we said about the puck just bubbling about. As that shootout went through the 6th, 7th, 8th round, the tension in the building just started to go up. I say that. I think we just were like, oh, could somebody hit the back of the net? And it is that. You just went, oh, for goodness sake, somebody score.
Referee happy. Signals for the whistle to go forward here. We've got a few fans giving a few boos with a few whistles coming forward. Siska just slows it right down, makes a move inside, loses control, and Stephen Murphy didn't even have to face that shot this time.
Trying to be a wee bit too clever there, Siska.
And here comes the player coach, Derek Walzer.
This is an interesting one.
Well, do you know what? He hasn't been his best tonight. So this might be an opportunity to basically put this away, get the game, take the 2 points.
This will win the game.
Stepping over the blue line. Walzer steps in, takes a shot. Good save again from Kalemba. Blocker save. Going to his right. Up into the air and into the netting. And after 4 shots each, we are still 0-0.
You're not hoping to get home to see Downton Abbey tonight, mate, because I think this is going on and on and on.
Yeah, it does almost get to the point where you, not that you don't care who wins, but it's just like, right, come on, sort it out here, guys. You know, especially, you know, Davey might have been home by 3 o'clock if someone had managed to score in the first round.
Yeah, you're looking at, you know, the chances that came our way in overtime. You're talking about maybe 45 minutes from the ice was cut, you know, at the end of the second, you know, period. And you've had overtime, you've had a lot of skating on it. It's obviously, you've had public skating on it earlier in the day. You know, the ice was terrible. You look how many players didn't even get shots off, fanned on the puck, or, you know, just bobbled off the stick before they even got a shot away. So big problem there. And it was crying out as we were, a lot of players were coming in and trying to move. And we're just like, we're not hockey players, but we've watched enough to give an honest critique. Shoot the puck.
Yeah.
You know, just
stop faffing about.
Stop faffing about, because the ice is so bad here, guys. You've had a look at 8 other players trying to dangle, and Mike Radges came in on the game-winning goal there, and he's just wristed it really from sort of centre of the slot, and it's ripped past Kalemba. It was crying out for somebody just to take a shot, and it worked out well.
Radges, Riley taking a penalty shot here tonight. I think this is the 9th round of penalty shots. He's showing a bit of speed this time. Radges comes over the blue line, takes a shot. Mike Radja wins the game for the Belfast Giants, 2-1. That's a wrap.
Oh, well, it's now Tuesday afternoon, and the Belfast Giants have taken the win here at the Storm Shelter. What a finish by Mike Radja, past Ian Kalemba. The Giants take 2 points in a brilliant battle.
Well, let's hear from post-game interviews. We'll hear from Adam Keefe, but first of all, we'll hear from the player coach of the Manchester Storm, Omar Pasha.
It's a 2-1 penalty shots win for the Belfast Giants against the Manchester Storm, and I'm joined after the game by the player coach of the Manchester Storm, Omar Pasha. Pasha, listen, this is such a tight game, such a battle on the ice, and you know, you guys went one up, you were holding strong, especially weathering a storm. Weathering a storm, no pun intended there, from the Belfast Giants, and then they had a bit of a five on three, and then they had to push back. These were good for the lead of the first period, but you're taking the game as a whole, because as far as I can see, such a battle out there.
It was a tough match. I mean, Belfast are one of the top teams in the league, and I thought we played a good home game. I thought we were generating chances. Again, we have to maybe bear down on them, but again, they had good chances. They made some good saves, and you know, overall, I'm happy about the boys. The boys competed hard, and you know, in a shootout, it's anybody's game. So,
you're trying to make this place such a bit of a fortress, aren't you? You're trying to make sure that you have this home advantage, and we saw it through the game. You know, there's a lot of bobbling pucks, a lot of the ice is in a certain situation where you guys are trying to control it. Sometimes it's really difficult out there.
I think it was a little bit frustrating for both teams because the ice was a lot worse than it used to be. Again, you can control the controllables, but I think we have to realize as a team that when the ice is that bad, we have to take shots, we have to drive the net, we have to be a little bit dirtier. And I thought we still depended on our skill set making backdoor passes when, you know what, the right choice was to shoot. But we made a lot of improvements this weekend. I mean, we thought we had a good game against Cardiff, we had a good game here. We just have to get 30 around their net, and but we saw a glimpse of it tonight, and hope we'll work on that this week. So
your defensive unit really forcing the Giants to shoot from the outside, giving your goalkeepers Ian Kalemba every chance to save it. You must be happy with the way they performed tonight.
Yeah, very happy. Very happy for my defensive unit. Even yesterday, I thought they played well, 5-on-5. Like, we only conceded 2 goals with the empty net, but the defense goal got a lot better, and we're playing a lot tougher in front of our net, and we're keeping them to the outside. So it's good to see that. And the forwards, you got to give them credit. They're coming back. And it's like I said, the last 2-3 weeks, our team has really improved. You know, we only had 1 point this weekend, but we just got to keep on moving forward. And those breaks will come.
It's another one goal game. It seems to be a lot of one goal games. You guys, you seem to be getting there bit by bit. You are getting there.
Yeah, we are getting there, and it's frustrating a bit because you play a good home game, and you miss a few chances. You go in a shootout, we don't even get one goal, and we have some good skilled guys. But again, there's a few things we have to work on. Our power play wasn't great this weekend. We had a good power plays in the third, so maybe if we have those executions on the power play or we get that goal in the shootout, obviously it's a different outcome, but it is what it is. And we have to keep the same work ethic, and like I said, the bounces will come when we get a little dirtier.
One last question. When we're going to like 6, 7, 8 rounds of penalty shots and you're there on the bench sending your forwards out there, what are you telling them? Score?
Yeah, I'm very laid back with that. I trust my forwards. These guys have been taking penalty shots all their lives, and I ask some players, you feel confident? And some guys wanted to shoot, and just a puck bobbled over them, and they can't get down on themselves. But at the same time, they have to learn that when the ice is that bad, you just got to bear down and shoot the puck.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. A tough game, but the crowd went away nonetheless entertained.
Yeah, thank you, Paddy.
Joined post-game in the Manchester win by Captain Adam Keefe. And Keefe, a bit of a different game from last night, smaller rink obviously, but good to come away a couple of points.
Yeah, it was one of those games. It was real sloppy, I think, by both teams, and the ice wasn't great, so we should have simplified our game and kept things simple, and I think we would have had a better outcome through the first 60, but it is what it is. We came out with 2 points, and we'll take it.
Good start to the second period, getting the goal, but then we sort of tailed off again. It just came down to a bit of a attritional game, lots of ice and lots of broken players. Just sort of difficult to get a bit of rhythm going.
Yeah, I think it felt like that. I think it's one of those arenas that you kind of have to be prepared to play, and maybe that's starts with me. Maybe we're going to be better prepared going into a building like this for the next time that we come into here. We'll know to expect some bad ice and small arena, and we just got to keep things simple and play hard, and I think, over the course of 60 minutes, we'll take the game over.
But after the disappointment last night and not coming away from the NIC with anything, always good to get 2 points and, get back on the plane home with at least one victory in the pocket over the weekend.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that was the plan after the big loss last night. We have to get back on the horse and go get another win. That's the only thing you can do, and I think now this one's over. We'll forget about that. It wasn't a very pretty game, but we'll take the 2 points, and we'll get ready to play against Edinburgh on Thursday. That's the next big challenge.
That's been a bit of a road swing now. We've been on 5-6 games, and we've come out of it pretty good, and body's starting to get healthy again, so sort of going back into the Odyssey looking good.
Yeah, I think everybody's kind of happy to get back to the Odyssey or the SSC arena, so I think everybody will be looking forward to Thursday night in front of our own fans. Kind of a feel-good game, and we know we have a tough opponent coming in. Edinburgh's been hot lately, we know that, so we're going to have to prepare for that. So we're going to have to be ready come Thursday because they're coming in and they're hot right now.
Well, Keefer, enjoy the rest of the night, and thanks for your time.
All right, cheers.
One more note, is that this game was the first one to be done live on Downtown Radio. I had the opportunity to join the great Simon Kitchen and our good friend Davey McCammond. Given the fact that you have a situation where in Nottingham you don't have a webcast, and for a very different reason, in Manchester you don't have one, Aaron, you were at home. How good was it to have that opportunity?
Yeah, it was great. There's such a difference whenever you're actually listening to something as it happens. And actually, to give a bit of credit to Davey as well, who managed to get the penalty shots on
Periscope,
which added a bit of something. And saying that, I nearly had to turn them off because I had to go out. But it's just one of the, it's such a difference to actually get a bit of the atmosphere. But you know what's happening as it happens. Hopefully, the one issue was that it was only available via AM. It wasn't available through the through digital or things like that. So obviously, you've got to start somewhere, and hopefully, it was enough of a success, and they've got enough good feedback that maybe in future they'll make it available through the website or something along those lines.
A lot of credit, Davey, to Downtown for taking the chance on this.
Oh yes, obviously, David in there now has. With doing the game night announcing stuff is pushing, and obviously partnership with Cool FM, we're pushed these things, and for teams that don't have webcasts especially, there's an opportunity for us to go in there and bring a game the people back home. It's a bit of a no-brainer. Very, very disappointing that the Nottingham Panthers wouldn't let us, you know, broadcast on Saturday night for whatever crazy reason that they have for blocking the promotion of this sport and blocking fans that can't get to the game. We had this last week, and I hate to jump on my soapbox again, but fans that can get to the games will go to the games. Having it on downtown radio would not stop someone who was intending to travel to Nottingham to watch the game. Oh, I can listen to it on the radio. I'm not going to go. They're going to go.
Well, the fact of the matter is, in this case, mate, is the fact that it was on AM radio in Northern Ireland. Therefore, it was not hurting the Nottingham Panthers in any way to broadcast this as part of the downtown setup, and still they refused.
I think this is part of a bigger picture that, you know, things will come out in the future as to why these sort of things aren't allowed to happen, especially the Belfast Giants, but it's just an absolute nonsense. It's a complete nonsense.
Mm. I have to just add my thanks to Dave McCallum and Simon for putting up with my nonsense through the game. I actually quite enjoyed it. And I know a good friend, Alex Knutsch, put up a couple of the gifts of my celebrations. Thanks for that, Alex. But yeah, it was a good laugh, I have to say, and hopefully we get to do it again. Highlights of the game from Storm TV are, as always, available on kingdomofthegiants.com. Let's have a look around the league. Well, we've already spoken about Dops. We usually start there, but we don't have to start there now. Edinburgh have signed Brandon Cucumiglio. Yes? Cucumiglio. A Canadian forward, because they've, of course, lost Everett Sheen recently as he moved on. We'll talk more about the Edinburgh Capitals in a second. Regards to the other new players in the league, the Sheffield Steelers have replaced Tyler Plant, who's injured, with Marek Pintz, I believe it said, who's a former Czech international. In saying that, the new signing could do nothing to prevent the real talking point of the week with regards to the weekend's games, and that was Sheffield suffering a second defeat in a row against the Edinburgh Capitals. They went down 7-5 in Murrayfield, Davey. And after the last game, the game that took place in East Sheffield, when the Edinburgh Capitals took the win, Paul Thompson came out and said that the Edinburgh Capitals forced the Steelers to play, quote, down at their level. What do you think Tom was thinking after this one?
Probably wishes he hadn't said anything previous, because I watched a little bit of Fife demolishing the Caps the night before in Kirkcaldy. And, you know, it's one of those things. Momentum's a funny thing in hockey. Caps have it at home. They're a very, very difficult team to beat. And I'm not sure what their exact record is in Murrayfield there this season, but they've won a lot more than they've lost this season. They got absolutely humped by Fife. Everything that Fife put on goal seemed to go past you back. And then he turns around and, you know, keeps the Sheffield Steelers out the following night. And it's just who knows? And another big body coming in, another big guy is being signed by the Edinburgh Capitals. They seem to have a roster full of size. And, you know, it's good to see a competitive Edinburgh Capitals, because if the bottom half of the league's competitive, it means the top half of the league have to get better to, you know, to keep up there.
Aaron, we spoke last week about the issue with Tyler Plant and regards to that, but they've brought in this new netminder. Maybe that had a bit of a factor as well with regards to settling with the defence.
Yeah, I mean, it always takes time whenever you've got to make a change like that, especially if your team sort of is built around one guy in particular. You've got to get used to the habits. You know, guys maybe direct their rebounds differently, or some guys give up more rebounds than others. Some are better at holding onto the puck. So, yeah, it's possible, but we won't complain.
All the results, Dundee have gone top of the Gardiner Conference following a 6-3 win over Fife. Fife themselves, as Davey has mentioned, demolished the Caps in Kirkcaldy 8-3. But it was another bad weekend for Coventry. 6-0 in Brayhead and 6-4 at home in a dead rubber to the Devils, who themselves beat the Storm in the Big Blue Tent the night before. We'll be talking about a number of those teams coming up, and we're not going to talk about Coventry because we've done that to death. Quick look at the league table. The Belfast Giants are top of the Elite League, 21 points from 15 games, closely followed by the Nottingham Panthers, 20 points from 12 games. They've obviously got those three games in hand. Cardiff also on 20 points from 13. Sheffield and Dundee. Edinburgh in 6th. Fife, 13 from 13 in 7th. Brayhead Clan down in 8th, 13 points from 11 games. The Storm struggling a bit, 10 points from 15 games, but the Coventry Blaze rock bottom for the first time in their Elite League history. And that's 9 points from 10 games. With regard to the Earhart Conference, the Giants lead the way from the Panthers, the Devils, the Steelers, and then the Blaze. And the conference, and the Gardner Conference, we've already spoken about the Dundee Stars leading the way there. One other issue I just want to bring up, lads, and I don't know where to fit this in, so we'll put it in here. Disney on Ice has been announced once again for the SSE Arena in March. And a lot of talk on various Facebook forums and the like about how this is going to affect our home playoff game, Aaron. It's obviously on the weekend. It's obviously a big money spinner for the SSE. We've suffered to the fact of that before and having to reschedule things or go on a long time without being able to go back. This is a pain in the backside, isn't it?
It is indeed, and I hear that Sheffield have already been on to Mickey Mouse.
Hello, you've been building up that one, haven't you, David? bring a bit of sense to this conversation.
It's going to be difficult to see where we're going to fit that game in. It'll obviously have to be fitted in somewhere. It'll have to be played somewhere else. Is about the height of it. I don't see another venue being the obvious solution. So I don't know how close to the playoff weekend you can go. You know, can the game be played on? When does Disney and Ice get out?
I think the times we can play on the Tuesday, like Tuesday week before, the Thursday week before, or the Monday just before.
Yeah.
I think in previous years they've even let it go on to the Tuesday there on the final week of the season, so you could be looking at a Monday or Tuesday fixture there. The most likely solution looks to be the Monday. You know, following the weekend, we'll probably play our away game on the Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think I have a funny feeling Nottingham maybe played the Monday last year, whereas everyone else had sort of played the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think Nottingham possibly had a similar situation last year and had to play on the Monday. Yeah,
I don't think it's a big deal. We'll obviously find at some point to play it. I think a lot of people in years gone by, we've had a gripe over the fact that maybe we've been the higher seed, but we've had to play, you know, away from home second when you would probably want to play home second. In this case, you know, I'm sure we'll find a spot to put it in. We'll get the game played and hopefully, touch wood, we'll reach the playoff finals. And how much it will affect the team, I don't know. But I'm sure the Belfast Giants will have it in hand and we'll find out in due course. Moving ahead, coming up, we'll be joined by Gareth Hewish of Ice Time TV to preview Saturday's game over the Devils. And of course, we'll be discussing the fan agenda. But now we go back to talk about the NCAA Friendship 4 tournament that's taking place in about 2 weeks' time. And it's time for the second of our previews. This time, it's UMass Lowell.
The roots of the current Riverhawks hockey program can be traced back to the Lowell Technological College, where hockey started as a club program in 1966 under the name of the Terriers. The original rink was outdoors at Cushing Field. In 1975, Lowell Tech merged with Lowell State College to become University of Lowell, by which stage the team had become known as the Chiefs, but were still without a permanent rink. It took until the 1980s before they found that permanent home in Tully, before moving to their current home, the Saugus Centre, in 1998. The team became known by their current name, the Riverhawks, when the University of Lowell transitioned to UMass Lowell in 1994. The college brought their entire athletic program, including men's and women's teams playing hockey, field hockey, basketball, baseball, softball, soccer, lacrosse, golf, track and field and volleyball together under one banner and ran a contest among students and alumni to pick the new name. Over the course of their almost 50-year hockey history, UMass have been coached by just six men. Richard Morrison, Bill Riley, who coached for 21 seasons, Bruce Crowder, Tim Whitehead, Blaise McDonald, and the current incumbent Norm Bazan, who represented UMass as a player between 2000 and 2004. Bazan is now into his fifth season with the Riverhawks, and these 5 years have arguably been the most successful in the program's history. Taking over a struggling side at the beginning of the 2011-12 season, Bazan reinvigorated the Riverhawks, who rebounded from a 5-25-4 record in the previous year, going 24-13-1, which saw Bazan recognised as East Hockey East Coach of the Year. In Bazan's second season in 2012-13, the Riverhawks claimed several firsts: the Hockey East regular season and tournament championships, the NCAA Tournament Northeast Region Championship, as well as the program's first ever appearance in the NCAA Frozen Four. Bazan was named the Hockey East Coach of the Year for the second straight year, as well as receiving the Spencer Penrose Award as NCAA Division I Men's Hockey Coach of the Year. The men's hockey team repeated as Hockey East champions in 2014 while advancing to the NCAA Division I Men's Ice Hockey Championship for the third straight year and sixth time overall. And last season, Bazan once again led the side to the playoffs with a top four finish in Hockey East, giving them home ice advantage. On the current roster, there are several players that are worth watching. These include goalie Kevin Boyd, who has put up a stingy 1.42 goals against average and 949 save percentage in his second season as a Riverhawk. On defence, Chris Forney, brother of current giant Mike Forney, is one worth watching as he goes into his second season with UMass. And up front, Edmonton Oilers draft pick Evan Campbell, who's in his third year, has so far claimed 5 points in the opening nine games and is worth watching. Notable former players whose names may be familiar include Craig McTavish, the veteran of almost 1,100 NHL regular season and 193 playoff games, scoring a total of 538 points and racking up over 1,000 penalty minutes for Boston, Edmonton, New York Rangers, Philadelphia and St. Louis, along with 656 games behind the Oilers bench and time as a panellist on TSN. Goalie Dwayne Rollison notched over 600 games at multiple NHL clubs, current Carolina and Hurricane Ron Hainsey, and former Manchester Phoenix goalie Scott Fankhauser, who faced off against the Belfast Giants in the 2007-08 season. Of course, the most recognisable name of all is that of former Boston Bruin enforcer and Belfast Giant Bobby Robbins, who Davey had a chance to speak to earlier this week.
Bobby, let's go on a bit of a journey together here. Let's a trip down memory lane, if you will, and we're going to go back to your collegiate days because we're featuring UMass Lowell as our featured team this week with the NCAA tournament coming up. Was pro hockey the goal for you whenever you started at UMass, or was it, you know, were you a student who played the game, you know, secondary to your studies and then realised the potential you had?
I think it was a little both. I mean, when I came to UMass Lowell, that was always my end goal, was just to play D1 hockey. And I had been in the USHL the year before, and when I got that call to come to Lowell, that was pretty much it. And I figured that was it for me, and I was just going to go out there and live out my dream. And, you know, school was always really important to me too. And I was an English major there, and I knew I always wanted to be a writer. And, you know, I was there working hard on the ice and in school. And then probably about my junior year is where it actually clicked that I had something inside of me that I could play past college. And as soon as I figured that out and had that realization within myself, that became my goal, and I just attacked that head on and never looked back ever since.
You know, you had a pretty outstanding college career for the type of player that you were. You know, 69 points through 127 games, and captain in your senior year, I suppose, would possibly be your standout, you know, for the Riverhawks. But Norm Bazin, the head coach, still uses you as the benchmark for players coming to Lowell hockey, you know. Saying you just did whatever it took to win games, that must be something you must be exceptionally proud of, that, you know, you've sort of left your stamp on UMass.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty amazing that he would say that. And I mean, from my perspective, I was just trying to give it everything I had. And I mean, I knew what skill set I had, and I knew that one of my best traits was just the determination that I had and my willingness to get into the dirty areas and do whatever it takes, like you said. And, you know, I think that's what Lowell hockey is all about. And they've always really embraced that blue collar mentality, of just working hard, and same with Belfast. And I think that's why I personally think I resonated so well at Lowell as well as in Belfast. And those were probably the two places where I really, really resonated the most throughout my career. I think it's because of that appreciation for that blue collar mentality of just getting up and going to work and giving it everything you have and laying it all on the ice. And, you know, if Norm says something like that, that's quite an honor. And, you know, I'm honored that he would say that.
A lot of the guys that are playing for UMass that are coming over to Belfast will maybe get the opportunity to listen to this interview, because we'll be tweeting it up to them over the next coming days. If you could maybe just give them one little piece of advice, or, you know, something that you wish someone, you look back at your college days and you wish someone had said to you, what would you tell those UMass Lowell players?
Well, that's a good question. I think I would tell those players that to really just believe in each of those individual players, to really believe in themselves. And I know that's easier said than done. And I know that for me, that's always something that I struggled with, was just battling my own demons and battling my own self-confidence and belief in myself. And I think that for a lot of athletes, that's the hardest hump to get over, is just realizing that the biggest enemy and your biggest adversary is actually yourself, and the person you see in the mirror when you look in there. And if I were to do it all over again, or give advice to a young guy in college, I would say to make your own personal development, not just on the hockey rink, but your whole complete on the ice and off the ice personal development your main priority. And then once you do that, you start gaining your self-confidence and your inner strength within yourself, it's going to translate into all areas of your life, and especially on the hockey rink. And I didn't really realize that until later in my career. And that's when I started to see the success in my hockey career, and really started to blossom as a hockey player and as a person, because I truly believe, and I know now, that they both go hand in hand.
The following year then, Orville, towards the end of your senior year, you get the call up to the AHL, and then you're bouncing about a bit, getting traded and getting call ups to the AHL through, you were in Elmira at the time. Was the amount of travelling about that you were having to do something that sparked the decision to come across to Europe? Just how did the Belfast Giants, opportunity come about?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I was kind of frustrated with my first 2 years of pro hockey. And, that's another thing I would tell guys in the hockey world, and, in college and in pro, is I think it's so easy to get frustrated and to see, it seems like there's a million guys out there who are just as good as you and better than you. And I know for me, it was just one of those things where I was ready for a change, and I needed a change of scenery, just because of what I was going through personally. And, maybe for me, that's just what I needed, was to get over to Belfast. And for me, it was just a series of circumstances that came up, and I had a friend who knew I was looking for options in the hockey world and needed some kind of change, and he just had mentioned the Belfast Giants, and for whatever reason it struck a chord with me. And next thing I knew, I was over there, and it turned out to be one of the best years of my life, so it was obviously the right decision for me.
It only seems like yesterday. It's hard to believe it was September 2008 now. It seems like a lifetime ago when you look back, but you hit it off. You hit the ice absolutely flying. You your line mates, Andrew Martin, who obviously came through UMass as well, Paul Dennis, and you started the season off absolutely on fire. Was it great to get just out of the blocks flying in the new city and just playing great hockey?
Yeah, it was one of those things, where everything clicks together and everything feels right. And I mean, that's the last trophy I won was that year in Belfast, and obviously everything was clicking. And I think the biggest thing is that was the first year where I just let go of all, just all that anxiety and worry about playing good hockey. And I just went out there and really learned how to play hockey just out of the fun of it. And I just went out there and laid it on the line every day because I was having fun. And we all were that year. And that was a big lesson for me, that in this hockey game, in this hockey world, it's got to be fun first and foremost. At least it does for me. And that was the big lesson I learned in Belfast, was just to go out there and really appreciate every single time you're out there, and most importantly, just to do it and have fun. And it's not for the money, it's not for the glory or the fame. And if you go out there and just do it for the fun as the core of why you're doing it, that's when I saw the most success, and that's when I was, that's when I felt the most fulfilled.
That season, we obviously won the two trophies, the Knockout Cup and the Challenge Cup, and one thing that strikes me when I look back at the pictures of that was our president, as he is now, Jim Gillespie. He's been in bad health, but he's actually coming back to Belfast for the first time in a long time for the NCAA tournament coming up. You seem to have a real personal relationship with Jim. The pictures of you together with the trophies after the game, you weren't just one of his players. You were really part of something back then.
Yeah, I thought about that a lot. It was one of those things where that year in Belfast was just absolutely incredible. I mean, all the guys on the team were amazing. And for me, just the experience was amazing. And it was all, you know, there were a lot of hardships through injuries and stuff like that, but, you know, I'm not even focusing on those at all. I'm just really looking at, as I've reflected back on that year in Belfast, it's all just unbelievable things and trophies and fun and a lot of love. And it's just, it was an incredible time, and Belfast is an incredible place. And, you know, all these, you know, all these college guys who are going over there, for most of them, I would imagine it's going to be their first time over there. And I'm just really excited for them to get that opportunity, because Belfast is truly a very special city. And it definitely is very meaningful to me. And I love my time over there. And I always felt like Belfast was like a home away from home, or at least my home over in Europe. And, it's just awesome. So I'm really excited for everybody to get that opportunity.
Well, sadly for us, good for you. You moved on then to, another season in Europe before you went back to the ECHL and into the AHL, and then realized the dream of getting to the Bruins and getting the NHL, curtailed obviously by that terrible injury. You've managed to get over that injury and get back to that life. We'll love reading your blog. It's a really great blog. We'll tweet it up again. But, you know, what was that experience like going from, we've had many players that have came from the NHL to Belfast. You're the only Belfast Giant that has ever gone from the EHL to the AHL, or to the NHL, sorry, the other way. Must be very proud. That last sort of five seasons of your pro career, you still had to work really hard to get the dream, but you got there in the end.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. I mean, I've tried to look at it from a outsider's perspective, and it's just a crazy story. And, you know, for me, Belfast was a big part in that whole progression that got me there and that got me to fulfill that dream. And I don't think it would have happened if it wasn't for Belfast. And it's all these weird coincidences, you know, with the Bruins playing, you know, over in Belfast the next season. And, you know, the more I think about it, the more I realize that it was just one of those things that was meant to happen, and it was meant to be my story. And, you know, after my time in Belfast and that second year in Europe, something inside of me really shifted and changed, and I really found myself and found that drive within myself again, and realized that, you know, like I had come over to Europe. Usually you come over to Europe to finish out your career, and, you know, that was my plan initially, and once I was over here, I realized that, you know, there was still a chance for me to fulfill my childhood dream, and that while I was over here, I really saw what I needed to do and who I had to become. I saw the changes that I needed to make within myself. And once I was, you know, I'm grateful to be able to have that vision and that realization of what I need to do. And once I had that, when I returned to North America, I was like a wild man, just hell-bent on pursuing my goal. And, you know, obviously the number of fights I had every season is a reflection of that. But I just realized what I had to do, and I realized what I could accomplish if I did it. And, you know, I just decided, I made a shift in myself that I was going to do that. And I know I did it.
I could talk to you all day here, Bobby, but time is short. You know, tell us just in closing, that first night you got on the ice in the Gardens with the Boston and Bruin badge on the front of your chest, what did that feel like?
It was absolutely incredible. And I mean, for me, it really proved that, you know, we always hear like you can accomplish anything and you can do anything and you put your mind and heart to. And I always heard that as a kid, and I really believed it for some reason. I don't know if I was just naive or if that's actually the truth of the matter. And for me personally, it proved that it is the truth. And, you know, I learned the hard way, the formula of what it takes to get there. And, you know, for me, it took 9 years to find that inner belief within myself. But, you know, I'm not worried about how long it took. I'm just grateful that I actually found it and that I achieved that goal. And for me, it proved that it is possible, that there is a formula for accomplishing your goals. And then if you stick to that formula of improving every single day and every day taking tiny little steps to get closer to that end goal or whatever your vision or your dream is, that it works and it's possible. And for me, stepping on the ice that first day in the Garden, it proved it to me. And, you know, what a lesson to learn. So now I'm carrying that with me for the rest of my life on, and what my next goals are, you know, in my new chapter of my life as a writer or whatever I'm going to become. And I'm going to be able to follow those same steps and that same protocol to achieve whatever big dream or any dream that I want to pursue. So for that, I'm very grateful, and what a great lesson to learn. And I'm really happy Belfast played a big role in that, and I'm grateful for that. So big thank you to Belfast and all you guys. You guys are incredible.
Well, Bobby, we congratulate you on a fantastic professional career. We thank you for making Belfast a part of it, and we wish you every success in your future life.
Thank you so much, and same to you. I appreciate it.
Well, I have to say, Davey, probably one of the most engaging interviews we've ever had. And a view from the bridge, chatting to Bobby Robbins there, you seem to be enjoying yourself. And he's a very passionate, very articulate guy.
Yeah, a lovely fellow to chat to. I think we've got kids of a very similar age, and we sort of started chatting about that before we got talking about the hockey. So we're sort of pretty comfortable with each other before we started chatting. And I think he could have sat and chewed the fat for another half hour, no problem. He was happy to chat away about it, about the olden days, if you like to call them that. But, you know, he was a player that's remembered for different reasons when he was in Belfast. I like to remember, I've got a picture on Twitter from 2 or 3 years ago where he's handing, and I think I mentioned it in the interview, where he's handing the knockout cup to Jim Gillespie during the sort of player, you know, group photo. Mm-hmm. And that was one that stuck with me, because right in the middle of the chaos of everyone trying to get their one finger up to say, you know, we've won the championship, he was doing something nice for somebody else. And that, you know, you look at the type of players that Bobby Robbins was, you know, the rough, ready to drop a gloves with anybody, ready to put people through the boards at the drop of a hat, somebody that went on to complete his dream and play in the NHL. He still had, you know, go and read his blog. He still has time for people. He's obviously a very well-educated guy and a lovely, lovely fellow to talk to. I hope we'll get to talk to him again sometime.
Hope so. Aaron, as Davey said in the interview, we usually get in the Belfast players who have already been to the NHL, guys who've already spent their time and fought their way there and maybe are, you know, trying to find new hockey after that time. Bobby Robbins is the only guy to go the other way. And what an achievement that was.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, I mean, the season he came here, you know, he did come with a reputation as being a bit of a tough guy, but he could really play. I remember one goal he scored in particular, like just having to pick my jaw up off the ground, and he had a really, really good wrist shot. That obviously wasn't what got him to the NHL, but, you know, you don't get to the NHL, especially the modern NHL now, without having a bit of skill about you as well, and he definitely had that, and he thoroughly deserved it for the work he put in.
It was a hell of a season as well that he was here, like you say in the interview, Davey. You know, Martin and Dennisett as well, two great players along with him, and a couple of trophies to boot.
It was a brilliant season, and I think, did Bobby Robbins get injured fighting
Andre
Payette? Yeah. After, was that the night following the night that Jason Rushton had gone completely mental and just fought everybody that moved? And
Connor Caldwell wrote an open letter to the Belfast Giants.
Disgusted from West Belfast, wrote a letter to the club who filed it under talking nonsense. It was a good time to be a fan. You know, those games at the Ice Bowl, we never lost a game at the Ice Bowl. It was, you know, I think we were 9-0 or something there, and it was, you know, the two cup finals were played there, really, really noisy. And to win the Challenge Cup for the first time, to win the British Knockout Cup, the last team to ever win it, you know, they're good memories. As Bobby said in his interview there, you know, that was the last thing he won in hockey. Okay, he got to the NHL, but he played at the AHL for years, for 5 or 6 years afterwards, and he got to the NHL. He never won anything. And you've got to sort of levy that when you're, you know, you want to win something in your career. You want to look back. And so, you know, that's a big memory for him when he looks back over his career. And he said it there in our chat, you know, Belfast has been a big part of where he wanted to get to and how it gave him that, you know, that foot up to get to the NHL. It gave him a new perspective on things. And, you know, when he looks back over his career, he'll have highlights, obviously playing in the NHL for the Bruins. But winning a championship, winning two championships, will be a big part of it as well.
Funnily enough, when we look back now, especially like this week, the Belfast Giants going back to Altrincham for the first time since actually the team that contained Bobby Robbins in it. And it was that team that was playing up against the Manchester Phoenix, as it was then, when Paul Dennisett was just firing goal after goal after goal. And it seems like such a long time ago. Really does, when you start to think back. I know you said that in the interview yourself, Davey.
Yeah, well, you must have the stats, Paddy. How long ago did we play them?
It was the 22nd of March 2009.
It was, what did we say, 2,427 days or something? We had the stat ready for
let's get this correct, David. You had the stat ready for Downtown Radio and I had to correct you, which doesn't happen often.
I was right. This is true. I was wrong in 1985. I was wrong, but I was happy to correct it by 13 days. When Driller came in there at the start of that season, he was scoring hat tricks for fun and that. It's not the big blue tent. It's like, as Colin Shields said, it's like the big blue tent that's got a bit of some walls. But it was good to see Neil, the GM, Russell, taking his turn with the blue tiles to wipe the plexiglass down to let people see through them. So it's a work in progress there, that's for sure.
# hardest working man in Altrincham. In the world, yeah. Well, he must be working hard. He can obviously afford the food.
If you can afford to eat there regularly, you must be on a good screw there, that's for sure.
That was on the company card, was it?
No, that was everybody pony up. £55 for a steak, and I near wet myself.
He's hanging around. Is it any wonder he's always bumping into like Bastian Schweinsteiger and things like this? Anyway.
You don't get a £55 steak in Cumber.
Right, lads, let's move ahead. Thanks to Bobby Robbins for joining us on there. And next week we'll be previewing Colgate University. Get your toothbrushes ready. It's time for the fan agenda, where you ask your questions in association with our good friends at Belfast Giants TV. What's irked you this week? What should we be talking about? And what have we missed? Tell us, and the best question will get a free pass for the Belfast Giants TV webcast. And we start with our good friend, Aid Bailey, who we saw in Manchester at the weekend. And he asks, with Higgins close to return, Davey, who steps aside? It is a good position to be in, but it's a difficult choice for Derek Walser.
You're right. Get coming to me first on that one. There's a few ways to look at it. The coaches already came out and said for him, Brandon Benedict stays in the team, although Brandon Benedict is in there as the extra forward. He's playing exceptionally well. And, if I had the choice, being the armchair coach, as you're asking me to be, Benedict would stay in the team for me as well. We've also got the situation where there's a number of players obviously playing injured. Just little knocks, little niggles, and this will maybe give the coach a chance to rotate a few, set a boy out, who might be carrying a little knock, and that'll give him the opportunity maybe over the next 3 or 4 weeks to look at his roster, get them all back fully fit, and then make that decision.
Mm-hmm. Aaron?
Yeah, I think that's probably the way it'll go. I mean, it's a tough one. You sort of think there's been a bit of criticism around Twitter, the likes of Beach. You're never going to leave Beach out. You think Mike Radja, maybe he's flown a bit under the radar, but he's come up with big goals at the weekend, scored the penalty shot winner. So it's very difficult, who to pick. And I think I'm just glad that, Derek Walls is getting paid to make that decision. I don't think he could pay me enough to do it.
You have tiptoed around that wonderfully.
I'm just sitting thinking to myself, I got away with that. I was quite pleased. Carry on.
You tiptoed around that wonderfully, and I'm not even going to bother answering it. We're going to go to Niall Perry, another person who we saw at the weekend. Has the Elite League become too politically correct? Is it not okay to hate other teams or players? Football has much more of a rivalry. Aaron.
It's always been the way, isn't it? I mean, the sport sells itself. The Giants sell themselves as a family night out. They've taken strides by bringing in Frank Carson Corner, as it was originally, and now Boomerang Corner, to bring that sort of aspect to it and allow the guys that want to make a bit of noise to get together. It's a tough balance, but I think they actually do a pretty good job of getting the balance right between the two.
David, we know why this question's been asked.
I think the whole world has gotten a little bit too politically correct, if I'm quite honest. These are big arenas, 7,000. You can get into the NIC, the 7,000 at the playoffs last year. There's room for everybody. And if there's not a room for a little bit of politically incorrect banter, or even if some things cross the line, as, Hitchie's famous song, it's a family sport, at the end of the day, we all want to support our teams in different ways. I would back Niall 100%. Like, he maybe was a wee bit near the knuckle, but, you know, that's what it's about. That's about supporting your team. I hate the Panthers. Everything about them, the custard-coloured shirts they wear, the roads that you take to drive the arena, the bars that you have to drink into to go to their club.
You hide it well, mate.
Yeah, but that's because I passionately love my club.
Yeah.
You know, and I can channel that hatred towards Nottingham because of things they do and their players do and what has happened on the 26th of October 2002. Things like that bug me and I will never forgive and I will never forget. But come on, at the end of the day, that's still a bit of tongue-in-cheek banter. Yeah. You know, and what happened to Niall at the weekend was out of order. Niall was maybe crossed the line a wee bit and was maybe a wee bit near the knuckle. But what happened then was out of order. You know, wise up.
Just to clarify, the Nottingham Panthers refused Niall entry to the NIC based on a couple of tweets that he made during the week. And in my opinion, if you start doing that and start basing it on social media and start basing on who you allow in and who you don't allow in based on certain tweets, then you're really starting to police things a little bit too tightly. It was near the knuckle. I thought to myself, you know, all right, man, I can see where you're going with this. It is quite near the knuckle. But if you start trolling, is it just because he tweeted them directly? Are you going to start trolling to see if anybody's saying things that you find mildly offensive? And then you're going to cancel their ticket to stop them getting into the arena? And yeah, we are getting a bit overly politically correct. And there's something about, like, when we go to places like Fife, where it's, you know, where you get it's hostile.
Every man for himself in Fife.
Hostile.
And it's a hostile arena, and that's what you want.
And myself and Aaron and a couple of others are going to Berlin in a couple of weekends, and you stand on the fan curve in Berlin, and it's a million times worse than going to Fife and the hostility there, the stuff that they shout in German, but the stuff they shout and the hand signals and everything's going on. You know, it's an aspect of sport. Hostility can be an aspect of sport and the emotions that sport bring. Yeah, the whole thing of the hockey family, and that's fine. But sometimes when the game begins until the game ends, you're dead against the other guy. There has to be that hostility, and sometimes that's what drives the emotions. I don't think the Elite League is any way back from that. It is the whole family sport and family environment and whatnot. Part of me wishes that we did have a bit more of the emotion. Hatred is a strong word, but maybe in certain cases it is that sort of feeling. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's a way back for the Elite League, especially that they market themselves. But sometimes I just wish there was a little bit more emotion in it. Final question. Seems to be a lot of people who were over at the weekend. This one, and it's his weekly mention, Andrew Endicott. His question, Davey, I'll start with you. With the Caps beating Sheffield, ourselves battling to a hard-fought win over the Storm, is this the deepest Elite League ever?
I'm trying to think back over the last sort of 15 years of my life and all the games we've went to, and sort of the leagues have always had those teams that have dropped off badly off the bottom, and even Coventry being rock bottom there can give you a game on any given night. Look at that 10-8 or whatever it was the other week, you know. And they will come round, you know. That's a club in decline at the minute, but they will come back. So Mr. Angry there asking the question, got a few pints of the electric soup in him and was Mr. Lover Lover the weekend. Everybody was his mate after half a dozen pints. It was good to see him.
I didn't get one. I didn't get a Twitter mention. I was feeling very left out.
Well, I let him know, and maybe the next time he's a beer enemy, he'll mention you. I'm not sure I like my one. Say what you like about Davey.
let me tell you a quick story. I don't think he'll thank me for this, but he did have a few pints in him, and he ended up stood next to me in the bar. sorry, Auntie, but he ended up sitting next to me in the bar with a full pint of beer in the Storm Shenter. And all of a sudden, Aidan Bailey appeared with his car keys in his hand. Aidan had been sat out in the car for around 15 minutes waiting on Auntie, who had told Aidan he'd been going to the toilet. He'd left the toilet, come back into the bar and bought himself a full pint.
As you do.
Let them stay.
I think he was staying in Aidan's house, but maybe Aidan made him sleep in the car or something, who knows. But back to his question, yeah, I would say this is as close. I would go to, he's probably right. It's probably as deep a league top to bottom as we've had.
Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to look at those two Edinburgh results we talked about earlier. You know, Edinburgh, a team that were really, for years, have been the whipping boys of the league and down near the bottom. But they're, you know, two wins against Sheffield in a row pretty much puts, you know, puts an exclamation mark on it there.
Yeah, that's a great both of you. I think also you look at the fact that the Dundee Stars, and we'll talk about them obviously in a second with regards to the game on Sunday, but the Dundee Stars coming back to the floor under Mark Lefebvre and leading the Gardiner Conference. And a lot of these, I think it's the, we talked about how the league has improved in standard, especially that Gardiner Conference has improved in standard. The Edinburgh Capitals have improved in standard. The Fife Flyers were able to beat them. Any, you know, they stuffed them, yet the Capitals can go on to beat the Sheffield Steelers. The Clan are sitting in eighth where they're having their trials and tribulations, and they've got a strong team. So, yeah, I think competitively, team to team, we're having one of the strongest, deepest elite leagues that we've probably ever had. Whether that continues, like, let's be fair, it's the start of November. Whether that continues, we'll see. But yeah, it bodes well, and for entertainment purposes and tightness of the league championship, we'll see around about Christmas time when the real business end, as we like to call it, of the season starts to kick in. Whether some teams will pull away and some teams will fall away. But no, so far it's been very, very entertaining. Thanks very much to everybody for their questions. I'm going to go for Aid on that one for this week, guys, with his question about Chris Higgins. Considering we tiptoed around it.
Even though he didn't get an answer.
Exactly. consider we tiptoed around it and didn't give him an answer. We're going to give him the free webcast. Thanks to everybody for taking part in the, we had a lot of really good questions on the fan agenda this week, and remember to keep them coming through the week using the hashtag TFA on Facebook and Twitter.
Hi there, Simon Kitchen here to announce this week's AVFTB Taxi Award winner, sponsored by Phonacab. For media blackout that prevents fans from watching their team in the 21st century on the internet, this week's taxi award goes to the Nottingham Panthers organisation. So the next time he's in Belfast, he can call Taxi for Moran.
Taxi! Taxi!
Taxi! Three games to talk about for the forthcoming weekend, I suppose. First up at the Odyssey. No. First up at the SSE Arena. We're in November. You'd think you've learned by now. First up at the SSE Arena on Thursday night at 7 p.m. The Edinburgh Capitals are the visitors. The Capitals themselves, as I look at my notes, have won 5 out of the last 10 games. Riley Amerson's side, of course, as we spoke of earlier, took the scalp of the Sheffield Steelers at Murrayfield. Davey, Edinburgh, a team that we spoke about getting better and getting stronger, and you said earlier on they're big units. What are you expecting at the SSE Arena on Thursday night?
Oh, man, good question, because I also said earlier in the show there that they don't travel as well as they could. They are much better at Murrayfield. Listen, you guys, a bit of an unknown quantity to me. I don't know really very much about them at all. And excuse me, man. They're large, the big bodies. They're going to be physical with us. They're going to be. Ryan Hayes is going to take a lot of stopping because he's got a lot of goals this season. I don't know how many it is, but I'm sure he's got
19 goals this season, and probably one of these players that I read Rob Plesser's the question answer session he does week in with various people, and Todd Kelman came forward one week saying, you know, Ryan Hayes seems to be the real deal, and he is firing them in.
They've done very well over the last number of years, putting in, you know, that one real quality goal scorer, and they're getting, you know, the big bodies, Kyle Bigos and Riley Emerson, Kyle Flemington, they're all going to do the dirty work if required. So, you know, Nickerson and Keith and Lloyd are all going to be kept busy. Lloyd, if he plays, obviously. And they've got goaltending who will be out to, you know, prove a point. I think they've already been to Belfast twice this season. Is this going to be their last visit? The odd SSE arena. I did it when I was talking to Kiefer on. And he did it as well. I had to apologise for both of us on the interview that keep calling it the Odyssey. I suppose it'll always just be the Odyssey. It's just named. It's just naming rights. So, but they're the sponsor of the club, and our sponsor of the arena, so we'll have to give them their place. It's going to be a difficult game. You've got to go out and earn your stripes in these games, and we've got to get the puck in deep. Manchester played a very good game against us on Sunday night, where they just trailed their five players along the blue line there, and they didn't let us take our normal zone entry that we like to do this season, where we've been going left to right or left, right to left, and taking the zone at speed and then dropping back and, you know, taking the points and getting shots off that way. We'll have to chip and chase, and I would expect this is what the Edinburgh Capitals will try and make us do. Big ice sheet coming, you know, transitioning again from the small rink to the big rink, but we'll have had a week of practice on their belts. Well, 3 or 4 days, obviously, with the game being on Thursday. So I expect a difficult encounter, but I would also be expecting that if we want to do any damage in this league, this is a game we'll have to win.
Carson Chewback in the goal here, Aaron. Edinburgh Capitals sitting sixth in the league, but rock bottom of the Gardiner Conference. What are you expecting?
I'm expecting a tough game. I mean, I think a big part of it will be, we looked at them before and they've gone in a couple of, it's a midweek game against them, and that always is, Davey said, and they're travelling. It seems to be that midweek games, when they travel, they don't seem to necessarily take a full roster. I recall looking at a couple of weeks back, I think when they played on a Wednesday night? No, they played on a Wednesday night against, I think, the Steelers. No, they won it in a shootout, but I think they only iced 13 skaters. I could check that, but the Elite League website, we'll not go into that. They lost to Coventry on a Thursday night, where again, they a week after that, I think it was, where they were short on skaters. If they bring a full roster, you know, the games we've played against them so far have all been pretty close. You know, with a 5-3 win over there, a 4-3 win at home. I think, and then a 5-2 win at home, which is obviously a little bit easier. But, you know, a full roster, they'll be difficult. A short roster, we can't take them too lightly because, you know, Ryan Hayes can put the puck in the net.
Mm-hmm. Well, that game is on Thursday night at 7 PM at the SSE Arena. If you can't get down there, join Sis and Johnny on Belfast Giants TV. And on Saturday night, the Belfast Giants make their first trip of the season and possibly their last ever trip to the Big Blue Tent in Cardiff. Of course, Cardiff soon to be moving to a brand new arena just across the way from them. And they're undefeated at home. But anyway, to talk to us about it, a good friend of the show and one of the many personalities on Ice Time TV, Gareth Hughes. How are you, mate?
Good evening, Paddy. Sorry, good to be back here on the View from the Bridge. It's always nice of you to call on me to come and give some sort of insight.
Well, you know, it's
the goings on.
Well, it's either you or Todd Kelman, and you know more. So, listen, you guys are unbeaten at home this season. Now, that's a fantastic record in the November.
Absolutely, and what's really quite strange is that we kind of find ourselves at the end of the games saying that we've still got things to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't really been firing all cylinders. It's only really the Sheffield game a couple of weeks ago where we sort of swept past them and it won 5-1. And then the Manchester game on the weekend where Lord swapped the D pairings around, where we've really looked like we were last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really encouraging that we just found a way. We found a way every single home game. I mean, the game against Nottingham the other week was a bit of a daylight robbery. Bickman was outstanding, but we found a way through him, and we got through the penalty shots. But we're starting to settle a little bit. Callaghan looked to bring us a lot more calm in the offensive zone, a lot more balance. And the D pairings have gone back to what they were last year, and everyone looks a little bit more comfortable. So, I'm beaten at home. I'm not going to complain about that. And if we do win anything this year in the league, if we do win that league title, a big, big part of that will be just finding a way in these first 11 games at home.
How key was that Challenge Cup victory, that Challenge Cup championship last season into bringing what you have now? Did it give that lift? Did it give that hunger to the side?
I think what it did was it gave Ben Bounds a huge amount of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
We started the season with Bounds being a young British goalie with bags of potential. He was a little bit nervy when he started, I think that's fair to say, and he grew into the season. But I think there was a real belief from him in particular, once he won it, that he is a championship winning goalie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone looked at it and said, you know, we can win anything with this boy in net. And after that game, he was just solid. And this season, he's been absolutely phenomenal. It has bred a culture around the place that we can win things and we should expect to challenge to win things. You can never expect to win it, of course, especially in the current state where there's a good top five, six teams that can spring something. But it was massive. It was massive. It brought us all together. It gave us confidence. And like I say, it made bounds from not just challenging for a top British goalie position, for the top goalie position in the entire league this year. And I could make an argument to say he's the best. It's a tough category. But I think it does stem from that. He's been remarkable.
One of the other key things when you look down the roster at the Cardiff Devils, mate, is that there's very few unfamiliar names. I'm just looking at it now, and Hotham, Lord, Marset, Doucette, Haddad, Salters, Richardson, Batch, Marsh. These are all names that, even Thomas Kirke, these are all names that we know in the Elite League. These are all names that have experience in the Elite League and going anywhere in this league. Okay, maybe we'll take the Storm out of it, but going anywhere in this league is not a surprise as to what to expect. So that must be a key factor in there as well.
Yeah, I think so. It's, when we've seen with you guys in Belfast, having that core of people who just bring the culture on year. I mean, you've got Keith and Lloyd who just bring that winning mentality. Those two in particular, I mean, there's obviously been more for you guys. But anyone new coming in, like Kirke, the last time he was here wasn't the greatest place in the world to be. But he's come in this year and he's got a group of guys there who are Andrew Lord's men. And they've got complete confidence in him, and he's got complete confidence in them. You only have to look at that with Pickett and Jones on the weekend, who got regular shifts. So he had a couple of bangs and bruises, and, you know, he trusts everyone that he's got on his team, and they trust him. And I think, you know, I would love to keep this side together for as long as possible, really. You always got to make small adjustments here and there, and it will be a bit of a culture shock, I think, when we go to a big ice pad permanently in a couple of weeks' time. But I think I said about finding a way, and I think they found a way because they kind of know how to win in this league after having a year together.
I'll come to that. I'll come to the new ice pad and the arena in a second. One or two more questions about the team would be, Andrew Lord as a player coach, we know from Belfast, and maybe when Derek Walser came into Belfast, there were questions from certain points in the Elite League and parts of the league said about, you know, a player coach is not the sort of thing you'd expect from an organisation of the Belfast Giants stature. I wholly disagreed with that. And I think you look at somebody like Andrew Lord, who's one of your top point scorers this season and also coaching a team, like I say, who are undefeated at home.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to the organisation giving that coach the tools to succeed. He's had Neil Francis with him for 2 years as a bench coach, but this year they brought Jamie Elson on board to specifically run the defensive line. So when you give a player coach the tools on the bench so that he can take as much pressure off as possible, I know you guys have got a lot of coaching staff there this year as well, that was put in the summer. It just, I think a player coach is fine. You just have to have a coaching staff there. And the more people you've got, good people in particular, like yourselves and we have got, then yeah, it takes a bit of the pressure off Andrew Lord. He's ultimately the boss. There's no question about that. There's no ifs, buts, or maybes. He has final say on a lot of things. But he's got good people around him, and that's a big part of our success.
A couple of the other names that came in, one that stuck out was Lee Salters coming from the Clan, but one real one for me was Guillaume Doucette coming from the Nottingham Panthers, and he showed at Hull and he showed at Nottingham that he's able to find the back of the net, the fantastic striker of the puck, and he's shown that as well in Cardiff. He's your top goal scorer at the moment.
He certainly is. He had a couple of stuttery weeks while we've had a couple of injuries and we've switched things around. But he did seem to have a bit of chemistry with Lord on the weekend with Martin being out. Doucette went on with Morissette and Andrew Lord. and Andrew Lowe got a couple of assists on a couple of his goals this weekend. So there's a bit of thinking to do now, I think, in the next couple of weeks. So we've been very rigid with Morissette, Martin, Lord as a line, and, you know, rightly so. It's been phenomenal for the last year and a bit. But I wonder if there will maybe be a few things tried in the coming weeks. I wouldn't expect it to change this Saturday against you guys. Maybe against Manchester we'll tinker a little bit, possibly, just because we're used to the ice pad dimensions and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Doucette showed this weekend that there's a lot more life than we've already seen, which is incredibly encouraging for us.
So let's have a chat about what you mentioned earlier and this move to the new Cardiff Arena. It's just a stone's throw from the Cardiff IKEA Dome that you frequent at this moment in time. How many years have you been in that place now, in the Big Blue Tent?
We moved in after the Challenge Cup win of 05-06.
Wow.
We've been in the 06-07 season, so almost 10 years,
almost.
Which have absolutely flown by, and I'm surprised that it's still actually standing in one bit.
Well, after the storm that I endured once, I remember being there when the wind kicked up and it came open at the corner. So I'm quite surprised as well, mate. But this move that's taking place now, obviously for the fans, for the organisation, and for the team itself, it's brilliant. You'll have a home of your own, like a more permanent structure. Let's put it that way. But somewhere that you'd be able to call, it's more. That's what's the word. A more set home. And, you know, I saw your tweet during the week in regards to John Lewis, and I totally agree with you. The days of the Welsh National Ice Rink were days of famous with regards to the Cardiff Devils. If anybody's ever been to Cardiff and you do walk past John Lewis and you've never been to WNIR, that's where it stood. To have that again, to have an arena of your own, what does that mean to the Cardiff Devils as a fan base more than an organisation?
It just gives us that legitimacy, not just within the league itself, but within the sporting scene in Cardiff. I think at the moment, non-believers in how good this sport is, they can be a bit of snobbery with ice hockey, with the general sporting public. You know, it's a minority sport in the UK, and our building just reinforces that at the moment, really. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look inviting. And Chris Agland spoke to us on the webcast the other week and was saying that some companies, it doesn't just fit into what they want to project with their brand and, you know, with the people they partner with. So it's just going to lend us that legitimacy that, you know, while we're a professional sports team, we want to be a successful professional sports team. And it's just going to scream that, you know, you can come down to Cardiff Bay and you can have an excellent night out. We're going to have top of the range facilities. You're going to have a nice comfy chair. The walls are going to be made of brick. It's just going to be so much different. And it's just going to ignite us. Hope, you know, that's the hope. It's going to be the catalyst, and it's going to be, you know, IAW is going to be the new WNIR is what everyone's hoping.
Yeah. And what about this? I think everybody's saying, I don't know if everybody's saying it in Cardiff, but certainly most people are saying it outside of Cardiff, is because you're so strong on that small ice pad in the Big Blue Tent, is this team going to be able to translate that onto the larger ice pad in the new IAW?
$1 million question. When we spoke at the beginning of the year, myself and John Donovan, as the season kicked off, you know, we hypothesized, is that going to be the stumbling block for us? Because it is going to take a couple of weeks and, you know, maybe a month or so to settle down onto a new way of playing. And we're not going to, the first few games, we're not going to have an advantage of knowing where the little, you know, nicks are on the boards and the way that the ice plays, the way, you know, we're going to be as in the dark as everyone else. So I think we may drop a few more points when we move, but you know it's a small band-aid on what will be, you know, to cover the cracks of years and years to come. It's just the benefits after that, really. But then who knows? Because I think we've thought a lot of times, you know, can Andrew Lord do this? Can he pull this out of the bag? And he does.
Yeah.
he comes up trumps. So. I don't think it's an excuse that he will be bringing in. He's not a man who gives excuses. He's usually very much in control of the situation. I know that Todd is speaking about getting us in as early as possible before we lay a game down. So we're going to do as much as we possibly can to learn about that ice pad. But it's going to be different, and I think there may be a few disgruntled fans, possibly. I don't think we're going to have games are going to be as physical as they sometimes get, and it's going to take a little time for us to get the atmosphere as hostile as it has been in our last two places. We're going to be a little bit further away, a little bit more spaced out to begin with. But we'll get it right. We got it right in the tent against all odds. So give us the tools, we'll be fine.
And what's the time scale now to move in?
Todd wants Boxing Day.
Yeah.
Green Bank are still saying the 15th of January.
Okay.
So I think 15th, 16th of January. So I think that's the worst case scenario, 15th, 16th of Jan. So not very long at all now.
No, not at all. What about this weekend then? What the Belfast Giants in town? Obviously, with the Giants in town, this is going to be, and given your record, you're going to be confident.
Yeah, I think we're confident every week that we can take 2 points away. It's always good to see the first rotation of teams. I can't believe it's taken until November for you guys to come and visit us. We've already been, we've seen Sheffield 3 times already, I think.
And given,
3 times.
And given what you've just said, that the next, if it is the 16th of January, the next time you'll see us will be in the new rink.
Yeah, which would be great to have. I'm sure Todd would.
An opening night against Belfast.
So it'll, I guess it's a shame it's not the doubleheader that comes in March, because it would have been great to see a huge swell of traveling Belfast fans open the place up, and we could have christened it in the bar afterwards with a proper few beers. So yeah, it may be the last time that we see Belfast in the tent. I hope so, because that means we've moved in on time, and there's been far too many delays over the year. But in terms of how it's going to go on the weekend, there's not much between the two teams, is there? You guys are on fire at the moment, and we just keep plugging away. We keep winning. I just want it to be a war. I want it to be a battle. I just want a full-on commitment. I want Keith to be his usual self. I want him and Hendricks in each other's faces in front, in the crease. I love a good full bloody game between the Carlisle and the Belfast Giants, and you guys will be unhappy with us. I mean, we took 3 points from your barn earlier in the year, which is not something we're that accustomed to over the season. So, you need to get those points back, so you'll be up for it, I'm sure.
I think so. I think over the last couple of seasons now, the Cardiff Devils have had our number in that place, and especially like that last season, it was very difficult to get a win there. And obviously this season is no different. I think what they say with that small ice pad, with the fact that it's such a hostile place with the fans right in your face, and that translates to the players. I know that Robbie Sandrock loved it there.
We loved him.
But one thing I want to say before we go, mate, is those guys that can't make it over, those guys that aren't able to get to the BBT on Saturday, you guys involved at Ice Time TV, a whole new setup to the webcast, and it's going really well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. The new guys are coming, Dan and Giles have come in, and Hannah runs it on game nights, and Sam directs us, and it's been really, really rewarding creatively. They've really trusted myself, Alan and John to come up with ideas, and we're starting to make it into a show now, it kicks off at 6:30, and it's just content. So we'll hopefully have a couple more interviews in the period breaks coming up on Saturday. We had our pal, Russell, will come and join us this past weekend to talk about the Manchester Storm. So that'll, he said he's a little bit shy in front of the camera, but we managed to coax a couple of answers out of him before he shot off. But no, it's been brilliant. The webcast has been brilliant. We've had excellent feedback, really kind feedback from around the league, which we've been really pleased with. And, you know, we try to be as unbiased as possible when we call it. We think that's important because, you know, who wants to pay £6 to your TV decimated verbally on a microphone? So we were very cautious about that as well. So, you know, it's a production that's run through the Cardiff Devils. It's not necessarily, you know, a Cardiff Devils-centric production. It's, I think, the important thing we specify, and it's something for everyone. So, yeah, we'll be running again on Saturday. It'll be £5.99. And it'll be icetime.tv if any Belfast fans want to join in. You know, the Twitter account is at icetime.tv as well. So we'd love to hear from everyone on the weekend, and hopefully it'll be a barn burner and everyone will enjoy it.
Absolutely. Like I say, some great feedback coming from across the league. I've tuned in myself for a couple of games. Most of it will be the shootout against Nottingham the other week. And it's a brilliant production. You guys hold up very, very well. Some great interviews, apart from Neil Russell and Todd Kelman. But some great interviews over there. And it's, we'll put details on our Twitter and we'll be firing people your direction, mate. Always a pleasure to have you on. Always great to chat. I could chat to you for hours about hockey, but I'll have to go back and chat to these other two now.
Thank you very much, Barry. And like I say, let's hope for a good one on Saturday. And I'm sure I'll speak to you later on in the season, especially as we get closer to the opening of the new rink. And you'll be most welcome to come and visit.
The Cardiff Devils, as I said, they're difficult to beat in their own rink. In the last 10 games, they've only lost 3 games, Aaron. Probably the last visit the Belfast Giants are going to have to the Big Blue Tent, and it's going to be a very, very difficult one.
It is. I mean, the way the Cardiff are playing, the way they play on that ice, it's going to be a battle, and I think it could end up being very similar to the Nottingham game. It could be very back and forward. It could basically be a case of whoever scores the last goal. You know, that may sound really stupid, but you know what I mean. You know, I think it could be a similar 4-3 type game. I wouldn't want to go predicting a win, but I think it's actually almost crucial that we get a result or a point out of this one at this stage, just to really put down a marker and stay at the top end of the league.
I think only about, Davey, I think only 2 or maybe 3 teams have taken points. Obviously, they're unbeaten in the Big Blue Tent this season. The Giants are going out there to smash that record. Do you think that the Giants are able to do that?
Yes. You know, it's only sort of 18 months since we were very, very dominant in the Big Blue Tent. So we know what it takes to win there. There's players, obviously, the likes of Peacock, Shields, Garside, Kiefer, Lloyd, boys that have been there many, many times and will not fear the atmosphere. And they have to, you know, as I think we're talking to Coach on Sunday night, and he was saying that, you know, the Manchester players were sitting in the locker room before they went out on the ice against Cardiff in the Big Blue Tent, and Killer has the crowd pumped up. They're playing the music, whatever tune it is to play before the teams come out. All the fans are stamping, and it feels like 2,000 people are trying to get in on top of you. We've got veteran experience that will not be fazed by that. We have to get out on the ice and just impose our game on Cardiff. They're going to be fast, physical, in our face. They're good on the power play. They know how to work their rink. They'll have a large crowd. It's a Saturday night game. We haven't played there on Saturday nights very often in the last lot of years. It's mainly been Sunday nights with the slightly smaller crowds. You know, it's going to be a very, very difficult game. As Aaron has said there, you know, last goal wins it. I agree with him. I think it'll be a one-goal game.
Just before we move on to the Sunday game, before we chat about regards to the Big Blue Tent, Davey, possibly from chatting to Gareth Hughes there, it sounds like this will be the Giants' last visit there. Any memories, anything there, when you would think back to the Big Blue Tent, what you'll remember?
Some great performances. One guy who went on the bigger and better things, Brock McBride. I remember him playing IKEA, and it was one of my
best ever number 12.
Best ever number 12. I remember it was one of my first official podcast appearances after I'd been down that game, and you and me talked on the phone about it. It might have been the night Coach done Coach's Corner.
Yeah,
the 5:30-second 1 hour, 1 hour turned into, you know. So remember watching Brock McBride there and thinking what a great, it was the first time that season I'd seen him live, and thinking what a fantastic player he was. The goal, who was it scored the dive and tip in goal?
Christopher Higgins.
Was it Chris Higgins 2 seasons ago now? Some great fights. I can't remember who it was. Chased Jared Adams around the rink and then beat the head clean off him. Might have been Jeff Swayze. I would need to look that up on the stats. I would have that. There's been so many good memories because
the Elite site, sure.
Say no more about the Elite League website. There was so many times. There was about 2 or 3 years we were almost unbeaten, and yeah, we were a force down there. And I was fortunate that was at the time that I was living here, and I was at all those games. And you know, one of the big memories for me was one that goes against me was one night, I think it was a Challenge Cup semi-final or something, we were down there and we were giving Stevie Lyle the absolute I think there was only you, me, Dr. Love and Cat. I think that's all that was there from the Jets. Yeah. And we were giving Stevie Lyle the absolute bird. This old girl was absolutely on top of us about it. And the Cardiff Devils scored. And boy, she got ripped into us. And it was just one of those, you had this sort of look at your hands and go, why? Well, fair play to you, love. lots of good memories from there, and hopefully lots more to be made in their new arena.
Yes. Aaron, did you ever make it over to the Big Blue Tent?
I didn't. You know, it's funny, I never have. I remember being over at the old, well, was it the Welsh National Ice Arena?
I have a picture of you and me together there, Aaron.
I think that was one of the first times we ever sort of properly met as well back then.
I mentioned it in the interview there in the chat with Gareth, and he did put I mentioned the tweet that he put on Twitter during the week when everybody was talking about the brand new John Lewis Christmas advert, and he had a bit of a grumble going, never forgive, never forget. John Lewis obviously now stands where the WNIR used to be.
Do you remember Aaron, the old boy that used to go to the WNIR Echo? He's a boy, he was in a wheelchair.
He was just
so light. I don't know whether he's still knocking about or I haven't seen him at the Big Blue Tent. He was quite an age of a gentleman. That must be 10 years ago, mate. So many good memories from those.
I remember that in there, you know, I remember people complaining that we were making too much noise. So it's interesting to, you know, with the drum, I think, and all, wasn't it, we had? So, you know, it's interesting that it's not just the NIC that doesn't like a bit of character in their crowds.
Yeah, well, I think coming from my own standing and the trips down there, a couple of things. I think the Chris Higgins goal comes to mind. There's just mid-air as he tips it into the back of the net. And I have to agree with you. One thing that popped into my head, Davey, was that old doll. Absolutely livid she was as we were giving Stevie Lyle grief. But what I think in that very same game, the other thing I remember was Ryan Finnerty taking the puck in on Stephen Murphy. I'll say Stephen Murphy. Pretty sure it was. Referee taking the puck in on Stephen Murphy, taking a shot after the buzzer. It going into the net. Him with his arms up in the air celebrating, only to basically to be met with Jeff Swayze's gloved hand that absolutely leveled him. He's just like, yeah! Boom! Down he went.
And goal disallowed.
And goal disallowed. good time. Listen, fair play to the Cardiff Devils. And, you know, they've been through a lot when they lost the WNIR and fighting their way back in to having this ice rink and developing and bringing back the Devils and into the Elite League. And of course, winning the Challenge Cup last year and obviously good times ahead with this new rink and this new arena coming in. But, before that happens, I hope we beat them this Saturday. If you can't get down to the game, if you're not traveling over, as Gaz Hughes said earlier on, you can get Ice Time TV. Follow them on Twitter. We'll be tweeting up some great coverage that they have on their webcast. And the final game of the weekend is against the Dundee Stars. It's a Challenge Cup game, and Dundee have won 6 of their last 10. Aaron, we've had trouble with Dundee over in Dundee at the DIA. You know, we look at that game the other week that we spoke about that was a bit of a battle that the Giants eventually came out on top. But they've all been a battle. They've beaten us there. However, Dundee themselves maybe haven't travelled as well. So a bit like Edinburgh in that respect, we may be looking for a different sort of dynamic to the game come this Sunday.
Yeah, I think the other thing, I mean, I know it's sort of a dead game. Both teams have qualified for the next round of the Challenge Cup. I guess the one thing is we'll be looking, you know, the Giants really hopefully will be looking to win this to finish top so they can get us. Well, I would have said an easier quarterfinal tie, but I suppose after the result on Sunday against Manchester, then maybe it wouldn't be easier. But yeah, you know, as you say, we've played them, I think, 4 times over in including pre-season. We've played them four times over in Dundee, and the two wins at the start of the year and the last two games we've won by, one was it 5-4 and 7-6. I think we could be in for a lot of entertainment on Sunday. We could be in for another, you know, 10 goal game here, which seems to be the way the team are going this year. It'd be interesting to see whether maybe, you know, if we get a bit ahead, Coach Walser uses the game as a maybe a chance to get Andrew Dixon some game time.
And it is interesting, Davey. Like, I don't see this personally as a dead rubber, because I know some people have said that, but you look at the fact that we want to top this group. The the Brayhead Clan have already played all eight of their games. They sit on 11 points at the top of Challenge Cup table Group A. The Belfast Giants are 3 points behind with eight, but they've got three games in hand. So a couple of wins here puts them, and Dundee are probably the next closest to be able to overtake them, but a couple of wins here and a win over Dundee, and I think there's another game against Edinburgh, and the Giants could top that table.
Yeah, I think Coach Walser will be looking to jockey for that position, because with the greatest respect, I think the next time we go into Manchester, we'll be much better set. We'll know that it's freezing cold. We'll know that the ice is chippy. We know what type of game. Walser's very, very honest guy, and when he's coming through all these interviews that he does with us, he's learning all the time, and he will have learnt a lot from Sunday night in Manchester, and he'll not make the same mistakes that we made on the next visit there. I think that it was Lou Dickinson got a hat trick against us in the last game. He certainly got two against us. You know, big guy that's scoring a lot of points for them. He's going to have to be taken very seriously. But as Aaron said, they've been very, very entertaining games. I got a text from Mark Lefebvre just after the last game saying, "Well, mate, were you entertained?"
Clang.
What was it? No, that's not a clang.
That's definitely a clang.
No, it's not. The, you know, 7-6, 5-4, was it, Aaron said, the last two games
have been? Yeah, 5-4 and 7-6, yeah.
You know, tons and tons of goals and backwards and forwards. And it wasn't like, you know, the Giants have run out their six-goal lead and they've been paid back or anything. It was goal for goal and punch for punch, and they've pulled the goalie. Panic tactics, got the extra man on the ice and came up with a goal that's forced us to go and do something special to win the game. They're a good team. They've got scoring from all three of their forward lines. They've got size with Doug Clarkson, who knows what to do and when to do it. And, you know, even they've got old Bobby Chamon, who is now not the best name in the elite league after this new guy has came in. I seen somebody saying today. So they've got pretty good goaltending and they've got a good decor. They're a good solid side. Seeing they were able to put something on their on social media there today that their ticket prices is going up, and that you can do that when you're playing well and the coach has got them going well. You know, you're able to do things like that. So, you know, things are looking good in Dundee for them there. And another, you know, tick on Eddie's question earlier on, is the league getting stronger? Dundee had fell away after winning the conference there a couple of seasons ago. That dropped away really badly, but they have came back with a real charge this season.
But the name you're thinking of is Brandon Cocomiglio.
Cocomiglio.
And yes, Davey, that is a clang. You've changed. I've got a text after the game from Mark.
All right, well, maybe you should delete that right there. You know, to save my blushes. It wasn't supposed to sound like Billy Big Ball. I got a text from Neil, the Coach Russell, today. Does that count as a clang?
No, that definitely doesn't count as a clang. the game takes place on Sunday at 5 PM at the SSE Arena. And if you can't get down there, you can follow it, as I said, with Sizz and Johnny on Belfast Giants TV. Three games in 4 days. So the Giants, it's going to be a tough one. Any other business, gentlemen?
Yeah, I think everyone needs to get onto our Twitter and page back a few tweets and look for a retweet we made of the Junior Belfast Giants, who produced their first club video.
Absolutely outstanding it is as well.
It's a great watch, and it's well worth it. It's only a couple of minutes long, and if you've got a couple of minutes spare, try and watch it. If you don't have a couple of minutes spare, make them and give it a watch. It's brilliant.
It's good to see as well the club being in this position where they're, you know, they're developing just the players of the future. Hopefully a few of these players can come on and be part of the Giants themselves. I did see a thing on, maybe I can't remember if it was Twitter or on Facebook, from our friend Aaron Lord over at Cat's Whiskers podcast, where he had said he hopes that there's a junior Dops, because a few of the hits in that video were a bit questionable. But Davey, you know, the players of the future.
Yeah, and it's always been Steve Thornton's plan since he came back in. Obviously, he had to coach the team last season. He wasn't able to, you know, just be as involved as he wanted to be. But you look at, there's a fantastic picture on Twitter there today of Derek Walzer, the head coach of the Belfast Giants.
Yeah.
And he's playing with a wee guy who couldn't be any more than sort of 5-6 years old. And that's the age you have to get them at. You know, you have to get them skating from them, come walking. The club are going to get involved in that. There's still the second ice pad. You know, that's all in the future planning, and as that goes on, you know, the club will get more and more integrated, and we'll get eventually, before we're old and grey, Paddy, there, you know, there'll be young guys coming and playing for the Belfast Giants again from Belfast. And you only look at the likes of, you know, young Chris Boyd and Stevie Eccles over in Bradford at the minute. Chris Boyd, man of the match, first star of the game on Sunday night there for Bradford with a shutout. Stevie Eccles getting 1+1, getting third star of the game. These are the future. Now, you know, selfishly for those guys, do I want them to go on and have successful careers in North America? Yes, but I'd love to see local talent playing for Belfast. You know, I don't know whether in their heads, do they want to come and play for Belfast, or do they, you know, I don't know what their ability is. I haven't seen these guys playing for, you know, a long time. So for me to say, you know, they've got the ability to make it, that's somebody else's judgment call further down the line. Would I love to see Belfast talent playing for Belfast? Absolutely. And while those guys are developing, we'll support them fully. We'll hopefully get them on the show one of these days and have a chat and see what their aspirations are. It'll be a lovely chance to get to talk to them.
I think I think we should definitely go after that. And fair play to both of them. Congratulations to both of them on doing so well. And with that, you know, fair play to them. And, you know, the Junior Giants, the setup there, absolutely fantastic. Get onto our Twitter, have a wee look back, and get following and get supporting the Junior Giants, because the more support it gets, the stronger it's going to get, and get involved. Gentlemen, I think that's us for the week. Just one more thing
I thought about just whenever we were talking about the sort of North American hockey there. The Gander Flyers obviously started, you know, a couple of weekends ago, and it hasn't gone brilliantly for them, but Evan Chevrolet, Chevy has played his first games there for the club, so we'll tweet up a few. Any, there's very, very few and far between webcasts over in that Newfoundland League, but any that pop up, it's played at a different time for the Giants. You come back from the game on a Saturday night, there's sometimes a game about 11 o'clock or something, you get a free webcast there, you see how Chevy's getting on, and we'll keep an eye on him this season and let you know how he's going.
Hashtag Ulster Flyers.
Ulster Flyers. We're back.
Thanks to Bobby Robbins, Gareth Hughes, David McCammon and Downtown Radio for the audio that we used earlier on. And thanks as always to you two gents.
I'm Mark Lefebvre.
You've changed, David McGemsey. You have changed. And on that note, thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll be back next week. And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey, and we'll catch you here next time. On a View from the Bridge. Got you up against the world, still you ride.